This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and this is Claudio's Radio Theater, Claudio's Speakeasy in Radio Theater. I'm forgetting where
there
I
we
am
go.
Right now. I'm looking over at Claudio, who has got the doors open and is ready to invite you all in to find a seat. Get comfortable in the place where you are always welcome and can always expect the very best. So good morning, Claudio.
Thank you, love. Good morning. And that is, of course, Audrey Layden, who also has the show Carrboro Bookbeat.
So what have you been up to?
Well, I just got through working Al Jarreau. What else? You know, nothing's going to top that for a while.
Wow. Wow. He had somebody else with him also.
Let me get this microphone straight. I guess I'm going to have to follow the mic. we have a stubborn little microphone arm. He had the George Duke Trio with him. And the most amazing thing to me, it always amazes me when you can go back far enough to remember your days in school. They've been together since high school.
And that's literally, I read something in the paper about that.
Have literally spent their careers together, which is just so amazing.
So it must have been a fantastic show.
Oh, it was. And he hasn't lost any of his ability to do that. I don't even know what you call that form of jazz, but he does all these guttural and throaty sounds along with just some great singing. So needless to say, he seduced a packed house at the Carolina Theater. We
were
sold
out. That's fantastic. Carolina Theater always has such great stuff.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of the old legends want to make sure they have that place on their resume, which is a really big point up for the Carolina Theater. And it is a fantastic house, built in 1926. Mm-hmm. So it's seen some amazing history. It's got a few ghosts in the building.
That yes, and you've got your own little studio for you, for Claudio there.
Well, actually, occasionally I spend a lot of time there, yes.
Communing with the spirits.
With the spirits at night, yes. I know them all personally, so I don't know the ones who were there before I joined the building, but I have sensed a few souls that I've known that used to work there.
Yeah,
occasionally,
occasionally
I'll come around a corner and I'll see somebody's face or just see an image that
is there.
Is them wandering
are there
the halls.
Names to some of the?
Oddly enough, I haven't named them.
Okay, no. I was wondering if there are some legends like this is where so and so walks and.
No, not yet.
Oh,
but
okay. No
legends. Wouldn't surprise me if the Phantom of the Opera makes his mark at some point. Got a very special guest here today whom I'm going to interview, or whom we are going to interview. She has written a book called The Other Side of Tuscany. Her name is Nancy Stolfo Corti. And say good morning.
Good morning. Buongiorno a tutti.
There's that voice.
Well, anyway, that's a gorgeous voice.
As soon as I've done my mischievous monologue, I will get into her life and we'll find out what she's all about. But I do want to read something off the back cover of her book, one of her own wisdoms. Remember, not everyone measures with the same stick. Not every clock holds the same time. Your time has come. Be bold, be beautiful. Gather your strengths. And if you have none left, gather your friends.
Thank you.
Doesn't get any better than that.
That
really sums it up.
A fantastic tag to pull you into wanting to get the book.
And the book is on wine, on Tuscany. I'm sure she's a restaurateur as well, besides being an author and a voice.
Infidelity and forgiveness.
Ah, okay. We need you a little closer to the mic there.
A little bit closer?
Yeah, I can push it closer to you.
It's really intimidating.
Figure about a hand away there. We're going to get this thing right. This is an amphibian, first time we're flying.
And the mics are movable, so you can move it closer to you.
Yes, you can.
Okay. Yeah.
Mine won't move closer. It doesn't like me.
Oh.
There we go.
Oh, wow. Mine is, right in my face right now.
Well, here's my little opening monologue. I want to educate some of those couch potatoes out there, just in case you don't like what's happening in the political world right now. And basically, I want to make it clear, I don't like either side. I'm not pleased with the fact that they don't realize who they're working for. This is called 545 People by Charlie Reese. Some of you may have heard me read this before, but I just think it's a good wake-up call. Politicians are the only people in the world who create problems and then campaign against them. Have you ever wondered why, if both Democrats and Republicans are against deficits, we have deficits? Have you ever wondered why, if all the politicians are against inflation and high taxes, we have inflation and high taxes? You and I don't propose a federal budget. The president does. You and I don't have the constitutional authority to vote on appropriations. The House of Representatives does. You and I don't write tax code. Congress does. Do we actually still have a Congress? You and I don't set fiscal policy, Congress does. You and I don't control monetary policy, the Federal Reserve Bank does, and that's a joke because there's nothing federal about that reserve. 100 senators, 435 congressmen, one president, and nine Supreme Court justices. All in all, 545 human beings out of the 300 million are directly, legally, morally, and individually responsible for the domestic problems that plague this country. Now, I don't think we should take the enabling public out of the picture on that one either. All the couch potatoes letting these things happen while the blood spills around us. And you need to get off that couch.
Well, that's one of the things I always like to throw in when you do this is yes. Like, we put them there.
Yes, there are no good guys in this current script here. I excluded the members of the Federal Reserve Board because that problem was created by Congress in 1913. Congress then delegated its constitutional duty to provide a sound currency to a federally chartered but private central bank. Why do we let them call themselves federal? It's totally deceptive, and so many people fall into the trap of thinking it is actually a federal authority. It is not. I excluded all the special interests and lobbyists for a sound reason. They have no legal authority. They have no ability to coerce a senator, a congressman, or a president to do one cotton-picking thing. That guy must have been from the South. I don't care if they offer a politician $1 million in cash. The politician has the power to accept or reject it. No matter what the lobbyist promises, it is the legislator's responsibility to determine how he votes. Those 545 human beings spend much of their energy convincing you that what they did is not their fault. They cooperate in this common con, regardless of party. Yeah, I think the party system is a bit of an illusion. But that's just me talking. What separates a politician from a normal human being is an excessive amount of gall. No normal human being would have the gall of a speaker who stood up and criticized the president for creating deficits. The president can only propose a budget. He cannot force the Congress to accept it. The Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, gives sole responsibility to the House of Representatives for originating and approving appropriations and taxes. Who is the Speaker of the House? She is the leader of the majority party. She and fellow House members, not the President, can approve any budget they want. If the President vetoes it, they can pass it over his veto if they agree to do so. So, that guy's in a strange fix, isn't he? It seems inconceivable to me that a nation of 300 million cannot replace 545 people who stand convicted by present facts of incompetence and irresponsibility. I can't think of a single domestic problem that is not traceable directly to those 545 people. When you fully grasp the plain truth that 545 people exercise the power of the federal government, then it must follow that what exists is what they want to exist. If the tax code is unfair, it is because they want it unfair. If the budget is in the red, it is because they want it in the red. If the Marines are in Iraq, it's because they want them in Iraq. If they do not receive Social Security but are on an elite retirement plan not available to the people, that's you or me, it is because they want it that way. There are no insoluble government problems. Do not let these 545 people shift the blame to bureaucrats, whom they hire, and whose jobs they can abolish, to lobbyists whose gifts and advice they can reject, to regulators to whom they give the power to regulate and from whom they can take this power. Above all, do not let them con you into the belief that there exists disembodied mystical forces like the economy, inflation, or politics that prevent them from doing what they take an oath to do. Those 545 people, and they alone, are responsible. They and they alone have the power. They and they alone should be held accountable by the people who are their bosses, but we seem to forget that, provided the voters have the gumption to manage their own employees. We should vote all of them out of office and clean up their mess. And that's my Lenny Bruce for this morning.
And that means get up off the couch there, people, and vote locally. Because where do you think people start?
Yes.
They don't start on Capitol Hill. They start with local offices.
Absolutely. If you don't want to drink the Kool-Aid, then get up and reject it.
And you've got so many people out there. We've got a runoff right now between two people for the Senate, I believe. And
runoff's actually a good term for it.
Yeah. Well,
think of runoff.
And it's... get out there and vote.
Yes.
It's a decision.
Do something. Let's
and
turn the tables.
Things like this, people just don't get out and vote.
We outnumber them, people.
So
let's make this right.
It's the buck stops in your lap.
And then there's that thing, that encroaching oil spill, and I'll leave it on that note.
Well, yes, good.
Yes, we give it all to those that mess it up.
So
I
let's go on this note,
and Carolina Theatre's probably going, okay, Claudio, shut up now. I want to acknowledge the historic Carolina Theatre in Durham, our primary sponsor here of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre. I had a great evening on the 19th with...
Al Jarreau,
thank you. Brain freeze. With Al Jarreau, I was very proud to be stage manager of that show.
Yes. We sometimes share a brain.
It's amazing how good he still is. He's got to be in his 70s now and still put on mm-hmm. one incredible show. The house was completely sold out. So a wonderful time. Him and the George Duke Trio.
Right.
So that's the Carolina Theatre. Also, quickly want to mention that the Carolina Theatre of Durham, Inc. has announced a multi-year contract with Ticketmaster to provide sales and marketing services for the historic city-owned Carolina Theatre complex. So
great.
There's a new deal in town.
Okay. That's the news.
That's the news. And, let's go a little bit to you for a moment. What's happening on this land you have in Carborough?
Yes.
Not in Carborough.
In
Pittsburgh.
In Chatham. It's actually in Moncure.
South of
Pittsburgh.
Oh,
right. Wow. And one of my big things now is I'm trying to think of a good title for my blog, because I'm going to do a blog journal about building something livable on this 5 acres that I own down there. And this week, a surveyor is going to be flagging the right of way. So I'm going to have a 500 to 600 foot driveway put in.
Wow.
And it has to cross a little creek. So when I figure, and this is all going to be on cash and sweat equity, because I'm like you, I don't want to owe any money. I mean, at this point
sounds
in my life.
Sounds like Green Acres to me.
Exactly. So eventually I will approach some people that I've spoken with in the past and say, okay, this is the amount of cash I have. How much enclosed space can you provide for that? Mm-hmm. And that's the amount of space I'll live in.
And what was the thing you were thinking about building? I forget the name of it that you think about building sort of as an advanced place.
Oh, a yurt.
Stay. A yurt.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that idea. Explain what that is.
A yurt is, they started out in Tibet and the Mongols and so on. So it's a traveling huge circus tent almost. But you can live in these things. It's a circular, not octagonal. It's not really circular, but it's... Octagonal,
yeah. And I would say it's very multi-layered canvas or a type of canvas.
Exactly. And you can put them up. You can put up like a 30s diameter yurt for maybe about $7,000 or $8,000, if I remember correctly.
Something actually approachable in this economy.
And people actually live in things like this in Wisconsin, where you get, long, heavy... winters.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
And you can heat them with a wood stove. And the thing that stopped me from actually living in a yurt was finally reading something about, do you want to come home on a winter day from an office or from engagements when it's 15 degrees out and it's only 17 degrees in your house? And you
stay home for a while, build that fire.
And you have to get the fire going before you take off your coat.
Right.
And I thought, maybe 20 years ago, but not now. I want to go in and flick a switch.
So now we're talking summertime thing.
Yes. So
I think it's a great idea.
Well, it's it can be an occasional thing. And
sure.
I have a large family, so
it can also make a wonderful guest house.
If the kids want to come and bring all their entourage, it's exactly a wonderful mm-hmm. guest house. I mean, go out there, light up the wood stove, and you've got plenty of space.
Where would you buy a yurt?
A yurt. It's with a T on the end.
Yurt.
It's Pacific Coast yurts. I mean, I'm not promoting people because I'm not connected with any of these people. But there's actually, if you Google North Carolina yurts, there are local yurt companies.
Actually, I've seen them exhibited in magazines before.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would be an extra. And I mean, I want to put up a... I want to design a medicine wheel and do a labyrinth.
I love that idea,
all of these things. So I'm looking for a good title for my my blog.
I'll have to imitate.
The house that Audrey built or something.
Wonderful. I'll have to imitate your medicine wheel because I'm actually living on holy American Indian land.
Yeah.
And I'm living in the particular area of that land, the highest point of the hill, sitting on a crystal vein that is where the leaders and wise men of the tribe held council. So I'm actually living in a very beautifully holy place.
Someday I will tell you the story of when I had dowsers come on, amateur dowsers come on, and some of them had psychic sensitivity.
Hmm. Come where?
Onto my property.
Onto your property, yeah, interesting.
You know, they wanted to practice. I said, sure, go practice. A story about an Indian woman. And
well, we'll have to get into that.
Yes. So, but you know.
But we'll pick that for another time. This is Nancy's day, exactly.
Nancy.
I am fascinated. I could sit here all morning. We don't have to talk about me.
Yes, we do, love.
I mean, you've got so many things going. I mean, you're an author, a restaurateur, a volunteer in many ways.
And a visiting angel.
A visiting angel. That's I like it. That the best. Tell us, I mean.
And don't forget to bring the mic close to you.
Okay. I'm so intimidated by it. Ooh.
I can tell that's a voice I'm going to have to do some recording with as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I'm a consultant, a marketing and advertising professional, and one of my favorite clients is Visiting Angels. And they were one of the first franchises here in the area, and they've been going strong for 10 years.
Hmm.
And what they do is they provide that in-between care when a family just is at the end of their rope and they need another daughter or another son or the client doesn't actually have any family. They are the ones that come and fill in all those areas that is non-medical, that they maybe someone can't reach something that's too high, or they just want a sandwich made and they don't have use of their arms, or they've had a serious accident. They've been very independent up until now, and it's extremely affordable. A lot of people don't realize that. I remember making the comment when I first met Amy and Tim Martin. I said, oh my gosh, my kids made more money babysitting dogs than some of your caregivers. And she
How
was
noble.
Like, I mean, it really is. The people that do this do it for the compassion that they have.
This is obviously oftentimes a life and death situation.
Yes, very much. A lot of times we are the extension of their lives in the last few moments of their life. And yesterday I had a wonderful conversation with one of our clients, and he said to me, I just went to the cardiologist the other day, and before Visiting Angels came in, I was diabetic. I had low blood pressure. I was depressed. I was taking all these meds. He said, I'm off all my meds. I'm no longer diabetic. And we took our blood pressure together, and both of us had perfect blood pressure. I said, you know what, George? We're doing great.
That's pretty amazing. You know, I think so many times, especially with the senior generation, but really with anyone, it's the social aspect of life that brings so much of this back. Actually having someone to communicate with, share with.
It really shows that companionship. I know that I am perfectly happy alone, and I know you have mentioned that to me as well, because we have tons and tons of
Well, one
of
shouldn't
hobbits.
Be threatened by solitude.
Yeah, but
I think you should know yourself on that wavelength.
There's a lot of people that have been so busy in their lives, raising their children, doing so many things, that they get to the twilight in the golden years, and all of a sudden they realize that their friends have either passed away, or they've moved away, or they haven't kept in touch, and they really are missing this social aspect, and I think it does so much for their health and their well-being.
They never really focused on the fact that that time would come.
Yeah, yeah. Life goes by so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We're so extremely busy, especially in this country, and I think I have been blessed with living La Dolce Vita for 20 of my years, and my children and I, even though we're all very, very busy, and we shake every moment out of every day, we do take these moments, these mini vacations during the day. We always stop and talk to someone in a grocery store or in an elevator. I'm one of these
That's
people
wonderful.
In an elevator that when my daughter lived in Manhattan, she was mortified because I would get in the elevator and I'd play Cash Elevator. And some people really thought that there were cameras and they'd stay riding the elevator. Others
explain this Cash Elevator. What is that?
Well, there's a show, and of course I don't watch TV, so I didn't know about this show. It's called Cash Taxi. And you cash cab, and you get in, and you answer.
So you're talking to another person that doesn't watch television. So explain, Lucy.
Okay. Well, this cash cab, you can get in a cab in New York City, and you have to answer trivia questions, and the cash goes up, and then you can get to a point where you can either take the cash or go for a bonus and double your cash. So I took this format, and whenever I got on an elevator, I would ask a trivia question, or ask someone to complete. Poetry that I would recite or something like that. And people would actually ride the elevator, or they couldn't wait till the doors opened to get off because they thought I was a loony. And of course, my daughter.
See your poor kids.
Oh my gosh. My daughter, who was an investment banker, was
a straight jacket in the elevator. Somebody.
She's like, I'm not riding the elevator with you anymore. I would rather take the stairs. She was on the 10th floor, so I didn't care. Great aerobic exercise for her.
Interesting way to get them to do their exercise, yes.
Yeah.
So tell me, I mean, there is actually way too much about you to explore. We're just going to have to sort of go fishing here and there. But give me some background on your life in Italy, in Tuscany.
Well, I studied in Europe, and I was on a scholarship with Emilio Pucci. So after
explain who that is.
Emilio Pucci is, in very, very nitty-gritty terms, is the inventor of pantyhose. But we all know what a Pucci print is. It's
is that the fellow whose picture you sent me? There's an elderly gentleman and you in the picture.
No, actually, that was Zig Ziglar.
Oh, goodness.
Emilio Pucci died, I believe, in 1995. He was a marquis, mm-hmm. and he was a descendant of Catherine the Great.
My goodness.
A wonderful, wonderful man. Gave a lot of opportunity, mentored girls from Brazil and Ethiopia in the fashion industry. And he was famous for these swirly scarves. He was very inspired by Palio, which in Chapel Hill, we have the wonderful Siena Hotel.
Yes,
that is,
that's right.
Il
Palio. The horse race has these wonderful foulard, which is the Italian word for scarf. But foulard is actually a scarf that has a border, and it's done on these special looms. And Emilio Pucci bought a 15th century telaio that made these looms and made these scarves. And that's how he started using the scarves as his main theme.
I would assume handmade. Obviously machine, but...
The prints, we would actually sit in Stanza Manican, and this is before computers. Mm-hmm. We had these huge... they almost look like coloring book pages. And then we would color in the browns with the turquoise. All these color combinations with the hot, cold, little 60-ish, 70-ish that we see even today are all inspired by the Pucci prints.
Hmm.
But his main thing was that he invented pantyhose. And he saw the tights that these guys wore with these little costumes when they did the palio. He said, well, I don't understand why women are wearing... garters except they're incredibly sexy.
Yes, exactly. How dare you stop that?
I know, but the convenience. Women were going to work and you get a runner and your hose, and these pantyhose were a little bit more resistant and more comfortable and convenient. And so that was the one thing that he really was known for. And then he went to design lingerie, so he made
it for it. And what spilled you into the fashion industry?
Ever since I was a tiny, tiny little girl, I had Barbies, and they had all these frilly dresses because it was the 60s, and I didn't like that. So I would take my father's socks, and they were black wool, and I'd cut them into these little black tight dresses, and I loved them. And my Barbies were all dressed in black, and my friends all thought that was really odd, and I'd cut their hair, And I said to my mom, I said, I'm going to be a sewer just like you when I grow up. But I'm going to tell the people how to make the clothes. Because my mother was a seamstress. And everyone told her what to do. And she would say, oh, look at this crap. You think somebody going to wear this? And it's going to cost a lot of money. And so she always complained, and I'd say, well, why aren't you drawing what they're supposed to be wearing? She said, because that's not my job. Mm-hmm. So I wanted the job that wasn't my mother's job. I wanted to tell people how they were going to sew. Mm-hmm. And I started writing to Emilio Pucci when I was about 12. Never got a letter back. And I just thought, well, you know, they're going into some big dark hole. And back then, it took weeks and weeks and weeks for a letter to get to Italy. But when I was 15, I did get a letter back. And it was from someone, his like personal assistant. And it was on stationery.
My
from,
goodness.
With the crest. And oh, my God.
Oh, what a thrill.
I was thrilled. And he was offering me a scholarship for college in Switzerland. Well, I was 15.
Uh-huh. That is the age that Europeans want you to get into an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I went from 15 to 18 for the culinary.
But not in the United States.
No.
I did manage to graduate when I was 16 and a half. And instead of going to Switzerland, they were opening a school in Atlanta. So I went a year in Atlanta because I wasn't even of age. I couldn't even go drinking. I was and I remember I was thrilled. And I was afraid if I didn't catch it, that he would die. I mean, for someone that was that young, he was in his 60s, and I'm thinking, oh my God, he could die tomorrow.
Interesting that you were that perceptive at that age. You don't really think about death at that age.
Oh, I always did, though. I always
That's
did.
Why you dressed all your Barbies
in black.
I was
preparing them for the
Sending
funeral.
Sending them forth, yes.
No, and there's a theme of death through my life. I say in my book that I was always afraid. I was brought up very Catholic, and the prayer, they've since changed it, always said, if I should die before I wake. Well, to this day, I have insomnia. I sleep very little. I used to wake up as a small child and go and stand by my parents' bed to make sure they were still breathing.
Wow.
And I had this terror of not waking up. And I just thought if we were careful, we wouldn't die.
Did you ever have this conversation with Woody Allen?
I didn't.
That's the only other one that I can think that lives by that kind of angst.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's why I live so fully, because every day I think, well, you know,
that's
this could be
point.
My last, so I want to make sure I get everything in.
The rest of us are too arrogant. We just assume we've got tomorrow.
I don't. I don't ever assume.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And so continue on. So you jumped over the ocean.
So I
and
jumped
there was
over the ocean.
This Italian-looking fella, and so what happened?
Oh, well, then I went to work for Emilio Pucci, and one thing in your mind as a child, and the industry is very cutthroat. And
that I can believe.
I after about a year, I thought, oh my gosh, I just don't want to do this anymore. Well, here I am already in Europe. I was in every paper in Dayton when I got the scholarship, and then I got the job with Emilio Pucci, and I couldn't let my parents down, so I didn't want to really come back. But I didn't want to stay. And there was a company that did prêt-à-porter. And I thought, well, maybe if I did prêt-à-porter, it would.
Explain that, Lucy.
Okay. Sorry. Sorry, Desi. The prêt-à-porter is like ready to wear. It was a manufacturer. And they basically were about a year behind of the haute couture, the high fashion house of Emilio Pucci. So I went to work for them. And I always did a lot of volunteer work. Well, I wasn't allowed to even leave without chaperones or bodyguards because they were kidnapping at that time in Italy. It was a pretty big business. And
I remember reading about that.
Yeah, and being the age of my proprietor's daughters, he was afraid not so much for my safety, but that they would kidnap his designer and thinking that I was one of his daughters, and they would have collections that would fall behind. So he would not let me go anywhere unless the daughters or the husbands of the daughters were with me. So they were doing a wine festival, and they enlisted me to design the costumes.
Ah,
and my husband was actually building the floats, and that's how we met.
My goodness.
And that kind of left me in Italy for 15 years.
Aye, aye. It's amazing how time can slip away, especially when you're having a good time.
Yeah.
So you switched into that. I'm jumping ahead here a little bit. I noticed that your book goes into wine and various other things.
Well, what happened is I was a designer. Even after my first child Kimberly was always written into my contract, so Kimberly traveled with me. It was very good for Kimberly. Kimberly spoke four languages by the time she was three. And
that's the best time to learn.
Yeah, and she picks up languages like nobody's business because of that. So she traveled. Well, I was working for a company that did the manufacturing for Laura Biagiotti and Gucci. We produced handbags, did a lot of leather. And I found out I was pregnant. Uh-huh. And they were kind of like, well, what do you mean you're pregnant? And I said, well, I'm pregnant. And it was with twins. And they were not very happy.
It's a rather life-changing situation.
Well, in Italy, they pay your maternity up until the child is like 3 years old if you choose to stay home. Well, when you're a designer, you really, even though you have this right, you can't really stay home. So they were looking at a lot of money for someone that was not going to be producing for them. And they were very upset with me, and they were making my life very bad. So I said, I worked about a year after the twins were born. And I said to my husband, I'm going to retire. I can't do this. So at 27, I retired from the designing world.
I wish I'd done that, retired at 27.
Yeah. And I thought I'd be okay, but my husband was afraid I was going to be bored. So we had these extra rooms. We were renovating a huge villa. And as they excavated and moved the hill away from this home, they kept finding rooms under it. And they would build, they would put the backhoe in and he'd start digging. They'd see an arch.
Now, what was this place you're excavating? I mean, what were you actually excavating?
Well, my husband's is in real estate development over there, and they'd buy these ruins that nobody wanted.
Interesting. Wow.
And then they would research them and turn them into, they'd repurpose them. And this house
sounds like a place I'd like to live in.
Oh, yeah. It's really a great house. This house is at the curve as you go up to the house that Machiavelli was exiled in.
My goodness. What history.
That would be my next door neighbor, Niccolo Machiavelli. Mm-hmm. He has a great view. I'm down on the river, on the Greve River.
Oh, poor you.
Yes, poor me. But this house was called Il Trapello, and it's where, as the people would go up the hill, they would get fresh horses. So there were the rooms that we were finding were actually the stalls under.
The stalls, interesting. And those are pretty good size.
And that's, my husband looked at me one day and he said, I've changed the plans for the house. I've decided we're going to put a restaurant in the bottom so that you'll have something to do.
How extraordinary.
At the time, I had a two-year-old and twins. And I'm thinking, I should have probably divorced him then. That was a sign, but I was very young. And I thought, okay.
You mean he was putting you up in a little nook and saying, go play, and then he was going on about his business?
Well, he did work the restaurant with me. I have to.
What was the name of this restaurant?
It's called Malia, and it was still opened until New Year's Eve this last year.
Wow.
We gave it in concession.
Malia, and what is Malia?
Malia is what everyone called me in Italy. And Malia means an irresistible spell or a curse. And they say I was a little of both. I always got my way.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to tell you some stories about that later. But.
Okay. And so he opens this restaurant for me, and I had his mother who had Alzheimer's that lived with us, had these three small children, and I just looked at him and I said, you know, a restaurant's a lot of work. It's a full-time job, that in itself. And it was very, very hard.
Yes,
but
it is.
After about a year, I designed a formula that it was dinner by appointment.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And had a lot of A-listers that were in my client base as a designer. A lot of people wanted to come to the restaurant just to be seen. So that was great. And a lot of politicians wanted to come to the restaurant to not be seen because they were with their lovers. So we had a very exclusive, and I had a little product that was less work. It was like, if you want to be really alone, you can rent out the whole restaurant for un milione di lire, which was like $1,000. And people went for that. Mm-hmm. And it worked. It worked out great for me because it was like preparing dinner for two friends. And I got the same amount of revenue that I would have had.
Well, I guess when you're geographically living next to Machiavelli, you don't need to be cheap, right?
Yeah.
Amazing.
It was an amazing restaurant. It was a great concept. And then we did tasting menus. And as my husband and I got more versed with the wines, and we started doing wine tastings with all the different portate, the different courses, and it really worked out. It was a very affordable, elegant meal, and we were an elegant, rustic couple, mm-hmm. so the restaurant really emulated who we were. And it was a great thing. It's just it was very, very difficult because people thought I was my husband's lover and not his wife. So they would come on to me. He was very jealous. Mm-hmm. Then he had a couple really serious accidents and
ouch.
Trying to run that restaurant by myself while he was in rehab and recuperating. And it was very difficult.
It just astonishes me. I mean, I'm still stuck back where you had a two-year-old and then twins, and your husband said, here's something, so you'll have something to do. I mean, I got stuck on that.
It's like a story within a story and within a story, and you ain't got to the book yet.
Yes, exactly.
Well, there's bits and pieces of this in the book, and as scattered as it sounds, my life is really, it's like a great big dream that has been shattered because I had so much promise as a designer, and I did retire at 27 for a man that I loved, and I still love him, but we could not live together. I mean, there were two men in that man, and I think a lot of people, they have this dream, they're that football hero in high school, and then they get into professional sports and have an injury, and they feel like their life is over. The reason I wrote this book is you can have a really big dream, and it can shatter, and you can grab onto a crumb of it and still feel full. And I have reinvented myself 100 times. I came to the States, and I wasn't a designer, and my degree was in marketing and fashion design. I went and worked in the hotel industry. I'm an event planner. I went into technology. I self-taught in everything just to get a job and do something meaningful and be able to
something
raise
challenging.
My children. Something challenging and raise my children in this country, because we decided to come back to the States to get my children into university here. I thought there's so many good public schools. I'm going to have three kids in university at the same time. I don't want them in university in Europe. I want them to have the sports and the academics. Mm-hmm. Which we don't have in Europe. It's very siloed. Even though it's a very good classic education, I wanted them to be whole people. And I wanted them to be global citizens. I didn't want them to have this very narrow view that sometimes happens in Italy, because when you live in such a beautiful place, you think of nothing else but your beautiful place.
Tradition is very strong in those regions, yes.
Yes, it is. So,
but the geography, my God, it's breathtaking.
It is, but it's beautiful here. There's so many similarities with North Carolina and my Tuscany.
I would give you that with North Carolina, but there are some other areas I've seen that I wouldn't want to spend much time in.
Yeah.
Well, you can go anywhere and find places you don't
want to
be.
That's true.
It's the same in Tuscany. There's Santa Croce, where they tan all the leather, where everyone has cancer. It's such a toxic environment, and it's so ugly, and that's in the heart of Tuscany. No one vacations there, so be leery of the appartamento. And
there's something we need to be very aware of and concerned about that's happening in this country now with the new aim at gas drilling, where they're doing this what they call fracturing and literally polluting, poisoning our underground water supply.
Yeah,
which is causing the same kind of thing. Cancer and so on.
If you wanted to make a list of the insanities,
they're all here.
It would
yes.
go on forever. I can
no
still
doubt.
Remember
and
way back when I heard about this was, 40 years ago, that they were doing A-bomb tests under the Rockies. Under the Rocky Mountains. And I was, I don't know anything, and I know that's insane.
It is.
That's just, anyway.
For some reason, I have no idea why man thinks that he's got to conquer nature and not just somehow become a part of it.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why the earth shakes, rattles, and rolls sometimes.
Yes. And I think we tend to forget that we are living on a living planet. Sooner or later, it's going to shake the fleas off.
We're living on this itsy bitsy little piece of dust that's floating around in the universe.
And we've got millions of gallons of oil spilling out and coming out now, and I personally have no faith that they're going to be able to plug it, because I have no faith in government or BP. So it's an amazing thing. We are very much on a precarious edge, and I'm not a pessimist. I'm going to live my life happily no matter what happens, but I don't like what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Yes. So. There we go. I'll try to stay away from being too naughty in that regard.
Well, it's
let's go back to Tuscany.
Yes, let's go to Tuscany. So you think that you can get some of the same feel here in North Carolina?
I do.
Good to know.
In the mountain areas? Or where are you thinking?
I mean, my son went to school at Appalachian State, and he felt very much that whole area reminded him of where we lived in Tuscany.
Hmm. Right.
And I find it everywhere. I love, mm-hmm. I live in Apex. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I first moved there, my neighbor was 99, and he would go out and look for poke salad. And I didn't call it poke salad, but I did the same thing. And
uh-huh.
I said, you know, can I have your dandelions? And he's like, you eat dandelions? And I said, I make pasta with it.
Oh, yes.
I said, wait till you taste my nettle ravioli.
Uh-huh.
And I know one Mother's Day, they did a story on me because I eat flowers and I just use everything. I had the
for
worst
salads
yard.
And so on, yes.
I had the worst yard in Apex, and my neighbors kind of took me under their wing and started cutting my grass and stuff. And I'm like, can you leave just a patch so I can eat?
Oh, no.
And I said, please don't spray. I cook everything. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of got this reputation. My friends will say, will you come over? My yard is long and I don't have anything in the refrigerator. I know you can make something.
Perfect.
Well, that's another thing is you've got a cookbook that you're working on that is ready to come out this year sometime later in the year?
It should have been already out, but I had a little bit of writer's block due to a romance.
Before we roll to the finish line, because we're having so much fun here, we're not realizing how much time is going by, give us a website or some way of people being able to contact you for your
you
books.
You can actually put in The Other Side of Tuscany, and you'll get to nancystoffelcorti.com. which is my website, or you can find us on Facebook. There's a The Other Side of Tuscany fan page.
The Other Side of Custody?
Custody, yes, and that's another story.
Hello, Freud.
But there's actually two books that should be out before the end of the year. One is called Above the Bakery, and they're the humorous anecdotes that came out of writing The Other Side of Tuscany. Mm-hmm. But because of the drama of this story of reconnecting with my husband and then fracturing the relationship and reconnecting and fracturing and just this reinvention. There was so much drama in the story that these little humorous outtakes didn't really fit. So we pulled them out, and that book is called Above the Bakery, and it's...
If I lived above the bakery, I'd be 600 pounds. There's no way that smell wouldn't lure me right back into that bake shop.
It actually has the opposite effect. I do not eat chocolate. And I can't stand the smell of donuts. So I highly recommend it if you have a sweet tooth, live above a bakery.
I was thinking more of the fresh breads. That's what drives me crazy.
Fresh breads I still love. Mm-hmm. And then the cookbook, The Kitchen Diaries of the Other Side of Tuscany, should be out. And it also has wine recommendations for the different recipes.
Sounds fascinating.
And it's just very simple, elegance, but very easy foods to make and very little equipment. If you think I moved here with what we could carry and have always cooked just as famously as I did back in Tuscany.
Fantastic. Well, you folks can plan on her being on the show again and again. We obviously have many things to pry out of her.
Well, really? I brought a sleeping bag.
And I think Carborough Bookbeat wants her as well.
Absolutely. As soon as that cookbook is out, particularly, we haven't had a cookbook author on in a while. We like to do that. And I am a collector of cookbooks that tell stories. So
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Really look forward to that.
Well, thank you.
But I was going to say, you write poetry and philosophy as well. Is there anything? We have a section of the show that I've been accused by certain listeners of not being loyal to, and that is radio theater, where we take a few moments, usually the last part of our show, which we're nearing toward, and recite some or read some personal literature. Do you have anything you might like to recite?
Or read
something
from
in memory,
book.
And I'll compliment with one of my own.
Oh, really?
Or read if you'd like to read from the book.
All
absolutely. Yeah. Give us something, and then I'll respond in kind.
All right. Well, let me read the...
And Audrey is, of course, welcome to do the same.
Thank you.
Okay.
And she's going to be reading from her book.
Oops, sorry.
And that's a kind of a sudden request to throw on your lap, but...
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thanks.
Well, I just recently got scolded, so I figured it's somehow in my consciousness.
All right. Well, this is... this is the very end of the book, and it's called Reflections.
And give us the title of the book, please.
And the title is The Other Side of Tuscany. When spider webs unite, they can tie up a lion. This is an Ethiopian proverb. When you decide to spend your life with someone, you share your life with them, all of it, despite the parts you did not plan or expect. You share it, and you spend it together. What is important are the lessons we learn from the struggles we endure. This is not a tale of infidelity or divorce, Italian style. This is a lesson from life that can be applied to business, children, and ourselves. Just because something is not perfect, does it mean it's not good? No, imperfection has a place in all of us. My life, my story, is about second chances, and third and fourth chances. It's not about giving up, despite how weak you feel. Even the weakest threads of spiders can tie up a lion if they unite. Gather your silken threads and remember who you are. There is strength in the mirror before you. There is power and forgiveness just as there is rebirth after every storm. However, you do have to shoulder the burden of removing the wreckage to allow the light to pass through, even if it is only in the cracks. You will need friends, and you will need strangers whose unexpected kind words or flowers will make your heart sing for another hour or another day. You will need sadness to appreciate the happiness you so carelessly set aside, like a dress out of fashion. Try it back on and be amazed at how beautiful it truly is. You will get through the darkest of days and the lowest of lows. Just remember who you are and be grateful. Remember, not everyone measures with the same stick, and not every clock holds the same time. Your time has come. Be bold, be beautiful. Gather your strengths, and if you have none left, gather your friends. Thank you.
Bravo.
It gives me chills.
My God.
Gives me chills. Absolutely. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something. Well, we're not done yet.
I'm going to
do something very brief so that we can continue interviewing her. But there's something that's sort of been prevailing on my senses every time I drive from home through what used to be woods and what is now being trees being cut down by the acre, hundreds of acres of them, and it's a dreadfully depressing sight. So I'd like to give a little tribute to trees.
I'm in full accord with that.
This is called Skeletal Repose. The swaying, rhythmic, restless stride of winter branches thin and wide, so skeletal in their repose as windward motions they expose, like arms that reach beyond man's prayers where distant realms greet distant stairs. And yet beyond allure defined, they reach within the soul, the mind, to all that speaks of God to me when I gaze long upon a tree.
Very nice.
Beautiful.
One for the trees. We should stop cutting them down.
That's the lungs of the planet.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I have magnificent trees in front of my house.
I moved into the woods. And the funny thing was, when they first installed my septic system, I got home. I was working as the lead fire watch for Sharon Harris, the nuclear plant. I wanted to educate myself on nuclear energy. And I came home about 6 o'clock in the morning. They were already busy digging and all that. And a farmer, one of those guys, comes up to me with a chainsaw in his hands. And I have these two perfect water oaks that are probably close to 100 years old. And he says, we can cut these down for you if you want them out of the way. And I lined up my mobile home to be perfectly shaded at 3 o'clock in the afternoon by these two trees. And I said, you can build me an outhouse before you touch my trees. Uh-huh. And he just looked at me and said, yes, sir, and put that chainsaw up.
That's
so
great.
Back to Nancy. Anything else you want to talk about? And so tell us, give us a bit of a descriptive on the book itself.
Well,
what is it? What's it all about?
It starts about 5 years ago. I decided that I was just going to move on with my life, and my children and my family all walked out on me. That it wasn't an option. And my husband had asked me for an annulment in 1998. And to me, that was just such a slap in the face. I would never give him annulment with three children. And so I wanted a divorce, and I thought I would have the full support of my family. So I really started writing this book as a letter to my children and asking their forgiveness and everything that transpired. I mean, we have the whole Peyton Place in our marriage. Infidelity is only on the woman's side. In Italy, it's a right to the male. They marry a good wife, and they love on the side. And my husband, because I was his lover before he married me, I just thought that we kind of rewrote that rule and it didn't hold true. And I'm sure the distance had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
So this book really kind of gives a little bit of the background that I had and why I was in Europe. And it can be a confusing story, but almost every chapter can stand by itself. It's almost like prose of this pain that I'm trying to work through and trying to understand the death sequence that I had talked about when I was a little girl and trying to understand why I had these fears. And I have had people that have loved it. I have had people that have hated it. I've had people tell me that it really helped them get through a dark chapter of their life. And that's really what I wanted to say. And I was really on the fence about publishing it. And then Nancy Cooper, who was a woman who was killed, I guess, by her husband. I don't know. I don't think it's out, but I think it's her story with the friends that tried calling the police. My own girlfriend, Mary, had called the police and probably saved my life when my husband was visiting one time. And it's in seeing that news story where it jolted me and it said, you know, I have to get this message out about domestic violence lives in even the richest families, and people need to know this. They need to know that they have to stop minding their business and get involved, because you can save a life. And you know, I really feel for her friends, and it's hard. And that's when I made the decision that we would publish the book, and I hope it has helped.
Very brave move.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
I'm sure. Not that kind of writing. No, I mean, I think any disciplinary writing is in itself something that really draws a lot out of you, but that especially so.
Yeah.
So you colored it, though, with so many different things.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. There's a lot in there.
I imagine the wine must have been a relief as well, because I see things about wine in there.
Yeah. Wine has always been a very big part of my life. Mm-hmm. I have a basket sitting in my kitchen that has corks from a recent love.
I collect
love
my corks as well.
But this is just one little love affair, and it's all represented by corks. And I think one day...
Another book.
I think one day that'll be a book.
Yes, sounds like it to me.
The book will be called Corked.
Corked. Uncorked.
Uncorked. The genie comes out of the bottle.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot... We're going to have a lot more conversations, I believe.
I think so. Yes. I think so. I really enjoyed this.
Uh-huh. Something told me this would be the dawning of something.
Well, great. I really appreciate you having me on.
How many other books do you have on fire at this point?
Well, I have...
Hanging fire, shall I say.
I have five started. Two very close to being... They just start needing the editing and the pictures. I need to get the pictures formatted for the cookbook. Then I have one that I started when my daughter was an investment banker, and it's called Stilettos on Wall Street, Walking the Fine Line in Heels. And she was
nice.
She was one of the few women, she was the only woman in her group. And she begged me. She said, Mom, please don't write this book. I'll lose my job. Well, she's since lost her job. I won't say where she worked. she's since lost her job, so it's really enticing. And with the economy, and there's all these insights that someone on the inside has, and it's just very interesting. And this is a little girl that, I mean, obviously she's not a little girl now, but... She's very petite, very beautiful, and no one really took her seriously. Mm-hmm. But she had the smarts that I think, you know, she's a little bombshell. And just having her on the inside of this big institution, and her just, she reminded me of the little girl that would come when I was a designer and put on the stiletto heels and walk up to my assistants and say, "You're letting my mother go out in that?" And I mean, she was just as spunky can be. And so it really, I really saw that in her being on Wall Street and surviving as long as she did. She was there 5 years. And she has some stories to tell.
No doubt.
Some stories to tell.
Now, quick question to you. One of the things you brought in for me today was a CD that you've performed on called Oh Mind, Story Therapy, The Beauty Behind the Mask. What's that? Tell us about that.
Well, Story Therapy was by Dr. Courtney Johnson. And I believe you can still buy the CDs. There were several of them. And what they do is they reprogram how we think while you're sleeping. They're hypnotic. And she started this therapy when she was working with veterans to kind of have them work through forgetting the trauma and the negativity and the negative thoughts. And
you do the voice for this?
Yeah, and I'm the voiceover. I'm the voiceover for Komen, Susan G. Komen, for the the anatomy of breast cancer. And I've done a few other voices here and there.
I just want to give Dr. Johnson's website here. It's www.ohmind.com. So ohmind.com is where you can find out more about the beauty behind the mask, story therapy.
Yeah, thank you.
Do we have music we can play here shortly?
Yes.
All
we
right.
We can go on to a CD I have no idea what it is. I think it's beyond the Chatham line.
We shall subject our listening audience. John Paul should be in very shortly. I don't see him in the studio yet. That's why I figured we might play some music between now and the time he gets here.
So do you want to close us out, Claudio?
I think I will at this point. Nancy, thank you so much for being on, and
You're welcome.
Doing this a lot more often.
Oh, I will.
There are quite a few things we can talk about, and at some point we might even do a spiritually philosophical show of some kind, which I've been wanting to do for a while. I know
Great.
Audrey's up for that. Audrey, thank you for your help.
This is always fun.
This is Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater on WCOM 103.5 FM, signing off until next week. We'll have some more surprises in store, and I promise I'll behave. Cheers.
Ah, no.